Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello, halflings! Before we get into this week's episode, it's about that time that we say thank you to some incredible patrons.
Meow, 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 meow.
Meow, 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 indeed. So, first of all, I would like to do a big Shire Folk shout-out to Pippa Roggak.
And I would like to throw out one to Lars Cook.
And Jack. Woo! Just Jack.
Oh, Jack.
Just Jack.
Just Jack. Just Jack. Solid.
The artist known as Jack.
Yeah.
Brian Grover.
Ooh, Michael Murphy. Thanks to you, too.
Thank you, Michael Murphy.
And thank you to Scott Reuter.
Ooh. Scott Reuter, woohoo!
Torsten Johnson.
Wow. Mm.
And Alexandra T.
Alexandra T. Wait for this one, though. Emily Ferrari. Damn.
From Emily Ferrari.
From the Ferrari family.
Yeah. Thank you.
We really appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah, we would really like all of that money, please. Thank you very much.
I'll take a Ferrari.
No,
I'll just take a Ferrari.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I'll just take a Ferrari.
That's true. You could always resell
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
thank you to Michelle Parker.
Thank Woo-hoo! You to Akisho. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. I went strong and bold with that one.
Yeah.
I think you did the best you could have under the circumstances.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Kyle Williams, Ooh. A much harder Ooh. Name to pronounce.
Bryce Gurney. Thank you.
Bryce Gurney.
Yes. Ooh, I like this name. Shannon Escalante.
Ooh, yeah. Damn. How about Leolin?
Yes.
Audra Purita. Or
Very nice. Woo-hoo. And how about Shabby Shockwave? I quite like
Shabby Shockwave.
Shabby Shockwave.
I like Shabby Shockwave.
One
word.
I'm a fan of that name. I'm a fan of that name.
Yeah.
Shabby Shockwave, one word. Shabby and
yeah,
Shockwave,
all
both
one
capitalized.
Word. Love it. Shabby Shockwave. Shabby Shockwave.
Ian Grossberg.
Ooh.
Ooh, yes.
And then Stephanie Novak.
Dez.
And Allison Holloway.
Anthony Ezzo.
Yeah!
Yes, we said it right! Anthony, shout out to Anthony. Anthony sent us an actual message on Patreon. Thank you, Anthony, telling us how to pronounce their name.
Hey.
So much much appreciated, Anthony Ezzo.
Thank you, Anthony Ezzo.
Thank you.
I really hope that we didn't just miss. I'm going to actually check.
Yeah, please check that. I had no idea. I'm proud of myself if I nailed
it
without having checked. But
I will laugh really hard if we just blatantly mispronounce their name.
I will, there's no real defense. I didn't see the message, but if I did get it right, then I'm going to give myself some palm wine.
Yes. Okay, so yes, Ezzo, you're right. You are 100% right.
Yes, nailed it.
Me and you, Anthony.
Because I asked for clarification if the double Z was pronounced like the American double Z or the Italian double Z, and it's pronounced like the American double Z.
Amazing. That's made. That's exciting. Who's next, Jeremy?
Didi Umo.
Very
Woo-hoo,
good.
Didi.
Asley Graves.
Yes.
Mine is Laura.
What about?
Just Laura.
Yes.
What about Charlotte Davis, yo?
Nice.
Or
nice.
Even Davies.
Davies, perhaps, yeah.
And then there's always Mari Casey.
And
Mari
Heather
Casey.
Nelson.
Yes,
and
Heather.
Bonnie Holmes, the distant descendant of Sherlock.
Yep, absolutely. Woo-hoo. Confirmed. And then to round off our list, we have Jared Taylor. Thank you all, Woo-hoo. You incredible patrons. So many new patrons in the month of June.
So many.
We really appreciate your patronage. Thank you so much. And I hope you're enjoying all the stuff that's available on the Patreon. Why not head over there? It's patreon.com/TB Halflings, where you get loads of extra TB Halflings goodness. So, shall we get on with this week's episode, guys? Hello, Halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Leander Onati Lewis-Nyau, but everybody calls me Onati!
Yeah, and...
I just want to, before I introduce myself, say that transition was legitimately impressive.
Thank you.
With yeah. just how aggressively abrupt it was.
That's how I do it, man. That's how I do it.
Wow. This is, it's almost frightening. This is, the artifice has taken over, folks. We started out being super uncomfortable, and then we were just like, well, we get comfortable, like, and not in the episode, but in the show.
Yeah.
And now we're to a place where we're too slick.
Oh.
And it's no longer believable.
Yeah, absolutely. We just we actually edited the hell out of that segue. Yeah. That was just snipped together from hours and hours of trying to find an appropriate segue, but we finally got there.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me, I don't know if anybody fans of Talking Heads out there, but David Byrne has a quote where he talks about how, in his opinion, a lot of people will criticize his singing voice, but he's like, my singing voice is more believable than someone whose voice is like more trained because you know that whatever I'm expressing has to be honest because I'm not good enough to express it through just like vocal tricks. I feel like, went from that to now we're just too slick.
Mm.
No longer take anything that any of us say seriously, including myself.
But speaking of talking heads, though, what is the name of your talking head?
Yes, my name is Jeremy.
Is it?
Jeremy Cobb, okay. But Tom Amos calls me Cobbert Downey Jr.
Cobbert Downey Jr.
That is
honestly, patrons, you give me life with these nicknames. They're just so funny. They are just so funny. I'm gonna have to find like a form, like a way you can fill out like a form when you become a new patron. It's just like, you know, like fill out all your details,
everybody gets a nickname.
What's the nickname? We need the nickname on there because it's just, they're just so glorious. They're so, so glorious. So thank you very much.
Amazing.
Oh my god!
The wrong dungeon and the wrong dragons.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now. This week, everyone, well, we're going to do another top five movies this week because we like talking about pop culture and all things pop culture are good references for stuff that you can do in D&D, so it's related. Don't at us. But first, yes. I think it is time. What, Jeremy? What's wrong with my segues now?
Don't come from me.
Yeah? Like, you come from my segues today?
Like, we also...
What's wrong with my segues?
We, from the beginning, established the Wizard of the Rings series, so I feel like the precedent has been set. We don't have to justify anything.
Hey, it's Jeremy. Jeremy, this is 2021, okay? We are three brown folks on the internet. Everything has to be justified multiple times, okay?
Oh, boy.
That is just the way it is.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, no.
But
I mean, you're right.
Do you believe there is, before we get into this, someone has a tale from the table for us, Jeremy Cobb.
Yes.
Our resident DM, why don't you take us on a little journey down your memory lane?
So, this story happened a few weeks ago. I was really, really, really hoping that I would get to tell this on the show before Unati found out. But unfortunately, she found out prior to, like, I had to, we did play again, so.
Okay. Let's play a little fun game here. Unati, I want you to give me as true to life a performance of you finding this out for the first time, if you can. Give
sure,
us, like,
can,
live reactions. Draw on that energy of past Unati hearing this information.
I can.
We're going back a couple weeks. And scene, let's go. Action.
Okay. So, I've told stories on the show before about the campaign that I'm running that's kind of like a gothic/noir campaign setting. And the travails of one particular character who is in a much higher economic bracket, I guess, than all of the other characters. And therefore, there was like a series of issues with like the party being separated. And then he died twice.
It was the money that bought him back.
It was literally the money that bought him back.
Financial privilege, y'all. Financial privilege.
And then eventually, I think I've told the story of when after the second time, his family just sent him away. We've had enough of this. You are clearly not equipped to be doing the job you're doing.
Fully
we're
enough.
Going to send you off to recover. So that player brought in a new character. In fact, that player has been on this show. For those of you who have heard our Christmas special that was sort of failed, that ended up going only on the Patreon from last year.
Hey, it was free on the Patreon, but it was not.
Yes,
it's not great. Like it was just, it was better than putting out
it
on the main
feed for everybody. Yeah,
because we were like, we don't really want people to hear this and think this is the standard of the show.
The episode itself was good, but the audio
was so poor.
Ooh, yeah,
so bad.
This is our very own Ryan, Ryan Ellis. He brought in a really cool character, I have to say. He's a lizard folk. He's a barbarian. He's like the enforcer for that agency. So he's working for the agency, but he comes from a very rough background. He'd done jail time. It was like all this really cool, interesting stuff built into his character backstory. And he was brought in to investigate this vampire who just so happened to secretly be working at the burlesque club where all the rest of the characters live and work. Mm-hmm. And he basically one of the characters is in league, secretly in league with this vampire. One else knows that the vampire is a vampire. She's based on Carmilla Karnstein, so her name is Sheridan. Nobody else knows that Sheridan is a vampire except for this one PC, but everybody suspects it. Everybody suspects it. Ryan's character was investigating, and I think the PC that's in league with Sheridan botched some like deception rolls or something, and Ryan's character saw through that and started to suspect stuff. Unbeknownst, there had been a fiasco the previous night where basically Sheridan had gotten a hold of a device that lets her erase. It's like a modify memory device. Mm. It's like a neuralizer from Men in Black.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can just erase an event from somebody's mind. And so after the session had concluded and everybody had to go, I ran like a quick one-on-one thing with the player who's in league with Sheridan. And they basically had a conversation where like, what are we going to do? And Sheridan's like, well, I have this thing. I can just go like change his memory so he forgets having suspected you and it'll be fine. And so the player was like, okay, cool. And so I messaged Ryan being like, hey, so this is what happened. Your memory got modified and blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, come on, man. And I was like, what? And he's like, well, dude, you can't just like make that happen. Like, let me roll. And I was like, well, yeah, but like, you realize like this is, she's a vampire. So like you really have one way you can go with this. Like, I think it's better if you just go with it. He's like, no, man, come on. Let me roll. Let me see if I beat it. And I was like, I mean, okay. He made the save. Here's the thing. Okay. Now, Ryan knew this. Sheridan can read minds. Okay. So as the second that Ryan made that save, Sheridan, the CR vampire, knew that he had made the save. And that he no longer trusted her. And at this point,
this is good, you Nazi. Keep this energy up. I like this. This is
fun. If you're thinking from the perspective of a vampire who can just kill people, you would probably think to yourself, well, this guy has officially proved too much trouble to be left alive. And so we had to play out a combat in which Sheridan chased him down and killed him before he could tell anyone else. And then we played it out and he's like, oh, man.
What's the best part?
Well, we're getting to it. He's like, oh, man. I was like, yeah. So, like, if you want to roll up a new character and stuff, he's like, what? He's like, well, yeah, because, you know. And he's like, well, no. The agency can bring me back. And I was like, right, but they can't bring back undead is the thing. And he's like, what do you mean? It's like, well, dude, she's not just going to leave you all dead. You're the investigator who was just put onto the case to investigate her. She's bringing you back as a vampire spawn.
You are a vampire spawn. Like,
you are under her control now. This is not how.
Yeah. So now half of the party, half of the party is now under this vampire's control. Roll a new character, Ryan. Roll up a new fucking character.
He didn't want to roll up a new character. Because he was like, nah, man, it'll be fine. Like, I'll just do what she says and then do what I want the rest of the time.
What?
I was like, okay.
How will it be fine? We're all just going to be vampire spawn. That's what's going to happen here.
It's just Jeremy DMing a group of vampire spawn as they just, like, the only thing you did, like, you just get them to roll damage. That's basically all you get the players to do is just roll damage whilst you narrate what's happening to them.
I let them say what they want, but it has to serve my purposes. Like, you can play RP scenes, but you're playing them fully under the thrall of this vampire. But yeah, so far, thankfully, only one member of the party currently is an actual vampire spawn. The other one is just an ally of Sheridan, to clarify. Okay. One is sort of kind of by choice. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of coercion as well, because there's sort of the threat of like, well, I mean, if you don't ally with me, then I'll probably just have to kill you and everyone you love.
Yeah, sure. So that's a bit of an issue. Yeah.
We are a four-person party. Four-person party. Ne? One of us is a bad warlock. Me, I just have a meat tenderizer and one eye.
You're also a cleric. You are also a very powerful cleric.
I am a powerful cleric, but this is a CR vampire, and two people are under
Can I just
roll up a new character?
Can I just say we will be releasing the stat block for the CR vampire as well. It's very different to a normal vampire. It's a CR vampire.
Yeah, I combined abilities from a few different kinds of vampires.
Oh, okay, cool. So it's actually genuinely a different vampire.
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
actually,
amazing. We are actually legitimately going to have to release a vampire now.
Yeah, she can actually, like, she straight up can read minds and stuff. And yeah.
That's so funny that we actually legitimately... How do we describe that noise? It's kind of like really tasty food, but you're fast-forwarding the recording of you eating it. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
I would write it as H... H-M-R-M-H.
And then with a little asterisk next to it, and it says, like, sped up, like, fast. Do you know what I mean? You have to kind of, like, it's going to get through it. You know what I mean? You have to get through it quickly. Wow. Unbelievable. Yeah. Why did you just, you know, like, the thing is, and I will say this very quickly before we move on, which is just that there are times as a player, and this is a genuinely piece of good advice, I think. There are times as a player where your DM says to you, look, you can put your hand in the box, or you can read the sign next to the box where it says, do not put your hand in the box.
Yeah.
And I think you as a player can maybe just go, you know what? I'm not going to put my hand in the box on this occasion.
In the box. Yeah. It's fine.
It's just a friendly piece of advice just from me to you, Ryan.
Yeah. The reason that I was going to have it auto succeed as well was because she had charmed him the previous night. So he was like charmed to view her as a trusted friend in that moment. So there was no reason why she would have to like.
Yeah. It made sense as
sometimes
well.
Sometimes you just got to take it. Sometimes you got to take the L.
Yeah. Take the L. The L's make the W's better.
You know what it is? You got to know when to tap. You gotta know when to tap. Because sometimes if you don't tap, the injury is
debilitating.
Much worse.
Yeah, exactly. If you tap now, you can come back for the second fight. You get the redemption story. Do you know what I mean? You get the redemption arc. You get the Rambo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? No, I could do it this time. Whatever. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a Rambo.
Yeah. I think Rocky.
Rocky, not Rambo. Yeah. Jeez. It was the same dude, just a very different
thing. Same dude.
sorry. He's punching difficult. Things, not shooting arrows at things. Yeah. Oh dear. Well, speaking of blasting things, why don't we do our top five sci-fi movies, guys?
Ooh,
yeah. So we're going to do top five sci-fi movies. Again, this isn't going to be in an order. This isn't going to be like a definitive list. We're not going to come to some agreed, settled upon, beautiful list of the TBH sci-fi movie top 10 or top five, whatever, because that would be nightmarish and no one needs to put that kind of pressure on themselves. This is more just us showing a love and appreciation for some movies and some things that we like. And I have an added thing that we're going to do at the end of this. I'm surprising you guys with this. On purpose.
Ooh, okay.
Which is, I want you to tell me which of these sci-fi movies you would most like to run a campaign in that setting. So that's the kind of definitive thing that I want. As in, like, of all the sci-fi movies we can do, you don't have to pick one from your list, it could be someone from someone else's list, but it's like, if you had to pick one of these movies that you could run as a campaign setting, which one would it be? Have any... potentially any honorable mentions that you just want to throw out now? We won't do like a big in-depth discussion of these ones, but ones that maybe didn't make the list, but you were like, nah, I really want to put that on the list.
I will throw out, because basically I ran into an issue here where I don't have like a clear top five favorite science fiction movies.
I'll be honest, I did struggle
too. There's just a bunch of movies that I love or just think are really, really good. So this is like my number five spot, but I'm making it an honorable mention because it's basically just sci-fi horror as like a genre.
Yeah.
So I got Alien and Aliens.
Yes.
Aliens, many people would call it action movie. It is. I'd say it's like action horror. Both great movies. A lot of really interesting subtext. Really, really interesting subtext in both those movies.
I was just going to say, I also had this at number five. But like, and again, I think for like a similar reason where I was like, well, it's kind of, there's not as like, it actually as much sci-fi. Like it is ostensibly like a horror film, but like, to think about the impact that it has had, and even just like some of my favorite moments, like even the tagline for the movie and the poster, and like it's just everything is iconic. Do you know what I mean? Like if you think
Alien,
Alien, like everything.
Yeah, it's amazing. Space Monkey can hear you scream.
Yeah, exactly. It's Space Monkey can hear you scream. The poster with the egg on it, the whole like it's face great. Huggers, like the
Geiger's art. I mean, like Geiger's art is just incredible.
You know what
incredible.
I mean? The chest burst. Much of it is just.
I won't go into detail for the in terms of the subtext of that movie because it might be triggering for people. But if you're interested, go look it up because there's a really, really, really subtextual story going on inside of that movie.
Okay.
That has like everything to do with the design. I'll tell you guys about it later.
This would be interesting. Yeah. This would be interesting.
Amazing, and it kind of continues a little bit into Aliens.
Well, I did actually have an idea, which I can say now. Like, I did actually have an idea for some future minisodes and stuff on our Patreon, which we could do some movie deep dive. Just because I know that Jeremy's got a lot to say on movies and stuff, and I was kind of thinking I would like to do that with games. So I was thinking maybe we can like tag team, just like we could do little 2-person episodes. Maybe this is one of the ones we could do in the future. We can.
And you can do food.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So I'll do games. You know, Artie does food. You do films. It'd be quite fun. Just do like some little deep dives into some stuff that we like. Nice. Yeah.
That's a great idea. Aliens. But my other movies. I'm just trying to speed through the Godzilla 1954. Unreal year for Japanese movies because Seven Samurai came out that year. Good lord. Original Godzilla is much more of a horror movie. It's about like the horrors of the atom bomb and different things like that in post-war Japan. Then Shin Godzilla. That movie is fantastic. I would say it's the first real like horror Godzilla movie since the original one.
Sure.
Great. Both of those are fantastic movies. The Thing. I love that movie. John Carpenter's The Thing.
The Thing.
Yeah.
One of the best premises, I think, for a horror movie. Mm-hmm. Just fantastic, great sci-fi movie. The Terminator. And Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Yes, I was also on my honorable mentions list was Terminator 2.
Terminator 2, not horror, mentions. But I'm throwing it in there anyway because I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Both great. Both amazing movies.
I can't wait till we do a top five of horror. I feel like Jeremy's going to have a meltdown. Like, I don't think it would be possible for Jeremy to do it. I think he's going to...
I might have an easier time picking just top five horror rather than top five sci-fi.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Weirdly, I might actually have an easier time.
Beautiful. Okay, so why don't we... Should we dig in? Okay, let's go through everyone's number fives real quick. Let's fire through what they've got at number five. Again, doesn't have to necessarily be in order, but that's just what you've got in number five. I've got Alien. I think, Jeremy, have you got Alien as well?
Alien was just part of that list that I said. That was my number five, basically.
Sure. Yeah. What about you, Nati? What have you got?
Number five, running on the sort of like classic monster sort of sci-fi films like Godzilla, I would go with the South Korean film The Host.
Ooh.
Really enjoyed that movie. It's right up there for me. Love it. Seen it a million times. It's really, really good. So check it out.
I have a little bit of a... how do we say, like a hangover, I guess. I watched like some proper Japanese like horrors when I was at like secondary school, and I couldn't sleep for such a long time. So like, yeah. There, if it was made in Asia and it's a horror film, then I'm like, I know it's going to be dope. I know it's going to be really cool, but like, you guys just do it differently and it just scares the shit out of me. So I might have to back out for a second because I can't take it. Okay. You guys, yeah. You just do it well. Okay. Real yeah. too well. I can't sleep afterwards, yeah. You know?
I mean, like,
because
yeah.
a lot of my friends
the
basically
host
said,
really
like,
fun.
Oh, watch like The Ring or The Grudge and then like, watch like, you know, they're like, you know, Asian counterparts. And I was like, oh, yeah, sure, it'll be fine. Like, it was horrendous. Yeah. Absolutely horrendous. So fucking scary.
Shit growing out of the ceiling.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, yeah. No.
You should see Audition sometime, Jasper. We got to watch Audition.
Why do I feel like that's already a no from me? I mean, the thing is, I will absolutely do it as like, I will absolutely watch some scary ass
Patreon exclusive.
Yeah. As like a live
to Audition.
But we should do it as like a live thing where you get like just me reacting to being fucking terrified out of my mind, because it is kind of entertaining. Yeah. Me being horrified, because yeah. I really do lose my shit. I can't. I have such an overactive imagination. I cannot handle it. Number four. Let's move on. We're not doing horror, guys. We're doing sci-fi.
Yeah.
What's another one on your list, Jeremy? Give us another.
I got, and this is again a sort of a combo here. I got the Paul Verhoeven sci-fis. You got your RoboCop, you got your Total Recall, and you got your Starship Troopers.
Okay,
all three of those movies are fantastic.
I mean, you've gone with a director there, which I mean. Fine,
I'm telling you,
I'll let it slide this one time. But like, to be fair, I actually, as like a little honorable mentions thing, I kind of wanted to put some of the Spielberg films on there, because I was like, there are a few which I feel like are legitimately worth
good ones
that have to be brought. You know, like E.T. or E.T. What
Close
else would I have?
Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Minority Report.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jane's favorite movie title, by the way. We were having this discussion the other day about like movie titles, and just really great movie, very evocative title. I also, because we were talking about this very thing, and I was saying how Jupiter Ascending, I think, is a unbelievable movie title for just a very underwhelming
terrible film.
One of my friends was in that movie as well, and I remember her being like, "Oh, did you see Jupiter Ascending?" And I was like, "I did."
Was your friend Eddie Redmayne?
Huh?
Was your friend Eddie Redmayne?
Yeah. My friend saw Eddie Redmayne and Mila Kunis. My Eddie Redmayne in that movie, man. Oh my word. He'd just come off the back of winning an Oscar, and it was just, I'm Eddie Redmayne. And
it's dreadful.
This is his, like, cool supervillain, British supervillain movie.
It's honestly, I could see in his head where he was going with it, and then it was just like, He kind of Tropic Thundered it. He went all the way, you know? He went too far. You know what I mean? Into like
way too far,
sort of withered British villain. it was so bad. Lovely. Another
Tropic
one on
Thunder.
My list I will throw out is Ex Machina.
Great movie.
Love Ex Machina. Love Alex Garland. Love everything he's ever done.
Yeah, Alex
love
Garland is just... It pipped... I feel like it, overall it's just a better movie than Annihilation. But I will say that I was nearly tempted to put Annihilation in, because I think as a raw kind of sci-fi movie, I think it explores some incredibly interesting subjects. Mm-hmm. And I think the design is just incredible and like... genuinely something that I've pulled as inspiration for like D&D stuff, because there are some really beautiful imagery in that. The crocodile is horrifying.
It's really good.
The plant flower people, just a really amazing. Like, I don't really remember what happened in that movie, but I've got like burnt in images of stuff that happened. But yes, anyway, Ex Machina is just a beautiful. Yeah. Gorgeous thriller of a movie. It's like it's got everything I feel like you need in a sci-fi, and it's just
everything you need.
It's so small, and it's something I really like.
And
that.
Self-contained, and really,
it's
and
got
dense.
Yeah.
It's just I feel like it's just got so much packed into a really kind of little kind of package, and I find it really enjoyable, really really enjoyable. Yeah. I love Ex Machina. So that is it's currently, again, it's sort of a loose number four. It could be higher, it could be lower. You know, it's just, this is just movies I really love. So,
Yeah, it's number two on mine. My number four is, okay, these were terrible, but as a woman, I have been scarred by them, and it is one of the reasons why I will never birth children. Species. Guys. Species.
Oh,
you
no.
go, you have fun, you hook up with a guy, hot girl summer. Yay! Living your best life.
Hearing the phrase hot girl summer in a South African accent is very weird.
I'm really here for it. I'm really, really here for it, actually.
I love that. Great.
Living your best life, you know, date them all, sis. Then one of them is an alien and impregnates you. Like, oh, I'm a bit late. Kanti, by 4:30 in the afternoon, you're full blown pregnant. And then your belly splits into four fucking quarters and a thing explodes out of you and you die. Yeah, no. That is stuck with me as a woman my entire life and has terrified
that
me. Not the greatest films.
Subtext.
That's just some plain ass Times Roman numeral, Roman numerals, Times Roman whatever it is font.
Times Roman font.
That is just some clear, precise text.
Yep. That terrified me. That's my number four.
I'd go so far as to say that's some Comic Sans.
Really clear. Really clear.
Bold Comic Sans. Yeah.
Instantly recognizable.
Yeah. Oh my word.
I have never gotten over that image in my entire life.
That is very funny. Let's keep going around this way because I think it's fun and I like it. Jeremy, what you got?
My next one is again a director. I'm doing it again.
Okay, this is cheating. You take, hold on, 1 point of necrotic damage. I want a d6 for that and still another one.
I cast Counterspell.
Ooh, I cast Counterspell, but I have to roll for it because you cast Counterspell at a higher level. I rolled an 11. Mm-hmm. You succeed. You take no necrotic damage.
My next one is Terry Gilliam. His sci-fi, I guess, duopoly. They're not really connected, but Brazil and 12 Monkeys. Brazil's probably the better of the two, but they're both really, really good movies. Brazil is like one of the, I think it doesn't get mentioned very often, but it really should. I think the art direction on Brazil and all of the design of the sets and the costumes and the world that they create is phenomenal. One of the most random Robert De Niro castings I have ever seen in my life. Like mid-80s Robert De Niro, and he just pops up as like a plumber. Actually, he's not actually a plumber, but he's like a handyman, is like ostensibly is what he's supposed to be, even though he's not. But yeah, awesome movie. Yeah. It's very similar to 1984, clearly influenced by that and other dystopian movies. But yeah, that movie's phenomenal. Go check it out, 100%. And then 12 Monkeys, very young, unhinged Brad Pitt.
Young, unhinged Brad Pitt? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. He was nominated for an Academy Award, I think, for that movie. Yeah, his first Academy Award. And then Bruce Willis, you got your sad Bruce Willis. Who doesn't love a good sad Bruce Willis?
This is ticking so many boxes. Yeah. I haven't seen this, but I'm going to have to check this out because
it's really good.
You should see both of them. Yeah. They're both really, really good.
Okay. They got on my list.
Who else is in 12 Monkeys? It almost doesn't matter. 12 Monkeys also has outstanding set design and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Art direction. Brazil's got the better theme, I will say.
Sure.
Brazil's theme is classic.
Fun.
I'm going to play it for you both later.
Very nice.
This is adorable.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of cheat as well. I'll stick to the theme of slightly cheating, which is I'm going to put both the Blade Runners up there next for me. However, I will say that I really, really fucking love the Blade Runner 2049.
It's the only one that's good.
Fair enough. I mean, now that I know where Jeremy sits, because the thing is, when we do these kind of things, you have to be like aware of where Jeremy sits, because Jeremy find a way to make you realize how wrong you are in your opinion. So I'm glad that Jeremy kind of agrees with me. I actually think 2049 is a better film. I love it. I think it is gorgeous. I think it is like, it has again, I'm kind of going in for that stillness. You'll notice a theme with my top five that I love. That kind of I just for me the sci-fi genre is about in a, it usually tends to be in a world of like unknowns and complicated kind of overarching big kind of societal ideas and things like this. It's about like a, then finding the human story within that. Like when you've got spaceships and lasers that destroy planets and God knows what else, finding the human story within that. And I love 2049. I think Ryan Gosling is just so simple. He's just a very like lovely, simple actor. Do you know what I mean? But I think that's so good though. I think that's so good. Like it's a performance I could never do. Do you know what I mean? And I really respect it.
He's just such a simple man.
It's just a simple
I couldn't be that simple.
I want to really clarify this because I know you're joking, but I really do want to clarify this because I know Ryan Gosling listens to the show.
He's a big fan.
That's the episode title right there. Because Ryan Gosling listens to the show. What I mean is like that. I think that there is it's very easy to go wildly over the top and things like, in movies like this. And again, that you're dealing with such big things. It's kind of like why I dislike the fact that Jared Leto was cast for this movie. It's one of the few things I'm like, I'm just not the biggest fan of Jared Leto. I think he's okay. He does some very good things. He does some very bad things. And
he has done some bad things.
But I think back to Blade Runner, I think that the kind of the way the world is actualized, even down to like color palettes, is just breathtaking.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You could make a very strong case.
Breathtaking.
You could make a strong case that movie, the original Blade Runner, is like an easily top five art direction for any movie ever. It's just that no movie about Harrison Ford hunting superpowered androids should be that boring.
See, I oddly don't mind it. I this very much comes from like a kind of aspiring filmmaker point of view, in sense of like I was obsessed with like cinematography as a kid and like imagery and the construction of imagery.
It's really
and
good.
So like for me, you know, I for instance, one film that I hate, Jade we always debate about this, but I hate Phantom Thread. I think it is the most boring movie I've ever watched in my entire life. And arguably nothing more really happens in Phantom Thread than in Blade Runner. Like, it's a pretty... they're both pretty still, silent, quiet movies. Do you know what I mean?
I'd have to argue that, for sure. A lot more happens in Phantom Thread.
Yes, exactly.
More happens in Blade Runner. I think more happens in Blade Runner. It's just really dull.
Yeah, fine. Absolutely,
And the difference is that Phantom Thread is two very staid English people having, interactions over, meals. Blade Runner is Harrison Ford, Han Solo, Indiana Jones hunting superpowered androids, and therefore has no excuse.
Okay, but look, listen. If someone sells you the movie on that premise, then you will be. You're going to be bored.
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner.
It's such an exciting title.
No. That's fine. I will absolutely give you this. And I'm like I'm saying, I'm coming from a very specific point of view, which is that I loved it for that kind of the visual feast.
How good it looks.
The kind of just every inch of that of the frame is filled with something. And I think that if anything, what I think Denis Villeneuve did with the 2049 was take that and like just turn it up to like 100. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like the way the color palette changes. Oh my God, it's just a feast. I absolutely adored it. I think I cried at the end of that movie, not because anything made me cry, just because I was like, it was just so beautiful. I was genuinely overwhelmed with how fucking gorgeous that movie was. Yeah.
You need to watch some Terrence Malick movies.
All right, I'll put them on my list.
Like that. Talk about cinematography. Go watch that dude's movies.
Amazing. What, Yonati, what have you got next?
Okay, I'm also going to cheat a little bit because it's not a movie, it's a TV series.
Okay, that's fine.
And it's not the original, it's the remake. So come at me if you will, but I don't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
Starbuck is my favorite pilot of all time. She is just amazing. And to see a woman like early 2000s, during that sort of era when there were very few powerful, strong women on the ground, It was really exciting for me. And also to see the rendition just played in a very, I'm going to use the term mask because, but it's also, it's too reductive. Just seeing a woman, just being a woman. And if that means she's coming off masculine, it's fine. You know, like she was just so
complex
fucking
as
badass.
Well, right?
And yeah, and complex. And the story was like really dense. And there was just so much take in the political drama. Then you've got the fighting, you know, fighter jets and pilots. You've got the intrigue with the Cylons. You've got the score that just keeps building and layering every time they find a new Cylon. You've got the twists, the turns, the deceptions. You've got the story on different planets. It was just, yeah, intergalactic, and I fucking love Battlestar Galactica. I wish I could erase the part of my mind that remembers watching it so I could re-experience the sensations that it gave to my body when I binged it. I love it.
No, that's nice. I think, and yeah. I think something intrinsic to sci-fi, it's about, it is about these kind of big overarching stories and then you finding these small little ways to connect and to do you know what I mean? And so I think I'm fully with you. And especially at the time, early 2000s, did you say?
Roughly.
A complex female character with like you know, who is able to have a bit of angry energy without it being kind of like stereotypical and stuff. Like, I think that's kind of rare at that time. And I think that
context
for movies is important. Like, I talk about this quite a lot, but like, I do think it's kind of important that whenever you look back at art or you look back at anything, that it's important to kind of realize the time it came out of, because I think it adds weight normally to the points that are being made and things like that. So for that to be made at that time, I think, you're absolutely right.
And she nailed her performance. She was fucking badass.
I wouldn't go as far as to say, I think like TV, especially around that time, maybe a little earlier films were ahead, but I think TV around that time did a little bit of a better job with female characters generally. There was a few more, I think, prominent. Maybe you had to dig them out a little bit more, but like there were, when they did it, they did it really well. Do you know what I mean?
Really well.
I could be wrong.
Starbuck is amazing.
It's just like a feeling I have.
Do you know what I mean? Starbuck just made me want to be a fighter pilot, man. The fact that she can... Okay, I mean, it's so old now, if you haven't seen it by now. The fact that she figures out on a planet where she can't breathe properly how to fly an alien spaceship intuitively to survive. I'm just like, bitch, yes!
Anything, any movie that has you clapping at the TV or like at cinema, like no one is allowed to ever tell you that's a bad movie. Like you go and live your life of enjoying that thing. That's fine. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, well, okay, hold on. Someone's allowed to say it's a bad movie, but you don't have to believe it. There you go. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, you can come at me with your wrong opinion.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's the energy to have, I think. That's the energy to have.
It's okay.
Jeremy, give us another one. I think we've got two left. All of us got two left. Is that right?
Yeah, I got three.
You got three left. All right. Jeremy, go for it.
Oh, it's because I made too many.
Well, surprise, you've got directors in there. I mean, you've listed about 25 movies already in this top five.
It's true.
So.
Okay, then I'm going to quickly show... What I'm going to do is I'm going to make one of them an honorable mention really quickly.
Okay.
I'm just going to throw it out, Back to the Future.
Yes, well, that was in my... I was kind of under my Spielberg umbrella I was going to mention, because it's, I think it's produced...
Okay, then I'll give it to you.
But it's directed by Robert Zemeckis, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that movie's awesome.
Yes.
But instead, I will go with... Wally.
Yeah,
the
dude,
other movie
this
with a really iconic dance scene.
Yes,
Wally
is amazing.
It is an unbelievable.
It's amazing.
Me and Jade watched Bernie the other day, which is like a little short.
Aww.
A little one of the like
the little robot
who's trying to
who
fix
has to, like, clean up after him.
Yeah, but Wally is brilliant. Yeah, sorry, carry on, Jeremy. Apologies. I got excited.
Yeah, Wally, the animation is amazing. I think the visual storytelling is amazing. Wally is just an incredibly endearing character. Mm-hmm. I like it when people make movies about people who are nice.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I enjoy movies about people who are mean and bad. I feel like people try to be like, oh, being mean and bad makes you deeper. Sometimes you can make a great movie about a person who is nice and just wants to be nice and do nice things for people.
Yeah.
And that's Wally.
Yeah.
He's just a really nice guy who has a lot of love in his heart.
Yeah.
And Eve, I like Eve's personality. I like that she's like the more competent of the two. And Wally's just like the helpless romantic.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, like.
I cried so much.
It is, man, that movie is like something that has. Timeless as well, like legitimately, like when we were watching Bernie the other day, there was parts of Wally that I was then like watching as an adult and going, because it kind of, it's like, it's set like in the final act of WALL-E, but the short. Yeah. And there was bits I was watching and I was going like, oh my, like even that bit, like you think about what that actually means, what that represents. And I was like, that is fucking beautiful. Like it is the general, and I think the thing is it has such a, from something when, if you think about it on a big societal level, starts with such a horrendous message. I mean, such a like, this is the generally the direction we're heading. We are heading into this like capitalist, like, you know, kind of time bomb where we're all going to end up as just like these effectively like automatons, you know what I mean? Like stuck in our chairs, just consuming, you know what I mean? Like it is a really bleak film, if you think about it in terms of like what it's actually saying about society, to end in a way. To end in that way, to be like brave enough to end in that way.
Actually hopeful.
It is. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like for a kid's, ostensibly what is a kid's film as well. It is just.
Yeah. So good. Yeah.
It's that classic period Pixar, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that movie is exceptional. Mm. And the score, Thomas Newman does a fantastic job with the score as well.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And I actually wanted to throw out there, I feel like I was talking about how WALL-E's just a nice guy, uncomplicated nice guy. Eve is actually the complicated dark one, weirdly enough. Like, she's like the conflicted one. She's like, I've been bred, I've been created to do this job, and I'm ruthlessly efficient at it, and I'm so good at it, and I'm doing my job, but now there's this person that I really, really like, and I want them to be okay. And it's like she's having this struggle between, like, do I do my job? Do I stick with this dude who's, who's just shown up? I think that movie's great.
And I think it's
so many good things.
It's such a gorgeous duality, right? That movie. In that, I think it really is that kind of. I think a lot of films have tried to do that, like old versus new, kind of nature and wild and free versus like civilization and progress. And do you know what I mean? But like, I feel like they're really embodied in these two characters. And then seeing the moments where they have like literal electricity between the two of them, like, not, like, I guess it's actually something I've been thinking about a lot. Recently for a specific reason, which I'll reveal at a later point, but the duality between like progress and civilization and all of that kind of thing versus, you know, passion and nature and feeling is always usually depicted in like a very confrontational way, like a very kind of like these don't get along, they don't mix kind of thing. And to see the depiction of them actually, that there is a world in which they can coincide. And I think that's why the end feels so hopeful, is because we see in WALL-E and Eve the fact that they can exist together and there can be a compromise and there can be a way in which we move forward and in a direction of like a beautiful, hopeful, kind future. It's, yeah, man, what a great suggestion, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Great, great movie.
I will go next. Sure. The Matrix.
Yeah,
I have the Matrix.
Movie's incredible.
It's fucking just, good. I mean,
this is fucking good.
Keanu, it was
Mr. Anderson.
The idea that was nearly Will Smith blows. I think this is the first time in history and the last time in history that I will ever say I'm kind of happy the black dude didn't get the job because I just don't. I just don't think it's the same. Because again.
He's too charismatic.
Exactly. He's way too charismatic for Neo. And again, I know.
Just like you're too complex to play some of these roles that Ryan Gosling plays.
And it's going
to
sound ridiculous. I know it's going to sound ridiculous. But again, it's a very, very quiet performance from him, from Neo.
Yeah.
He is a very, like, human. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's such a kind of dull, uninspiring human at the beginning to then rise into the. Being the one, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then maintain that humanity dullness because if it was then extended, it wouldn't be the same movie.
See, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's I think
you need that slower energy, and Keanu Reeves nails that. I mean,
Will Smith could do
it's great casting.
I think Will Smith, oddly enough, could do relatable everyman at the beginning. You know, I actually do think he could do that bit. But when Will Smith ascends to the one, that's where I struggle to relate to Will Smith because I'm like, motherfucker, it's Will Smith. Do you know what I mean? He's so cool, charismatic. When, by the time he grows into his powers as Neo in later movies, I go, there's no way I can relate to this dude now.
And then also imagine the different quality of chemistry that would happen between Will Smith and fucking Lawrence Fishburne.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Imagine, like, what would happen?
The tone of their scenes would be so different.
so different.
Like, you'd be like, Stefan, hit me and hit me. At which point, Will Smith just bitch slap backhand Lawrence Fishburne.
Honestly, though, I'd watch that movie and just to see, because I think it might work. It would just be a very different movie.
It'd be a very different movie. And I wonder whether, like, tonally and it would hit the same notes and that's where I feel like it wouldn't work as well. Whereas, I do just think, and also I think contextually, it gave us Keanu Reeves in that role, which has given us so many beautiful movies and things since then.
Which then gave us John Wick, because then he fell in love with martial arts at this point. Mm-hmm. Then the martial arts junkie was born. And now we have Mr. Wick. You know, we had Mr. Anderson.
Now we have Mr. Wick. Yeah.
You know?
That was Keanu Reeves becoming the one. Do you know what I mean? That was his actual individual process of becoming the one. And now we get Matrix 4. And I will be completely honest with you here.
I'm fucking there.
I have a real thing about, I don't understand. Like, I don't get why people get so angry about remakes and like redo. Because I'm just like, hey, you don't have to acknowledge that. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have to exist for you. For me, man, let's fucking go. Let's fucking go. More Matrix? Yeah, let's go.
I want to see more Space Kung Fu. Like, I don't even give a fuck. I just want to see. And also, yes, please give me more Keanu Reeves on screen. Yes, Daddy, thank you. I'll take all the seats.
And I'll throw this out quickly.
Yes, Dad.
I think we've started to grow out of this. Because I will admit, I will kind of semi-retract what I just said, because I do think actually there was a period of like early 2000s into like 2010s where we made some really fucking bad remakes and sequels.
Oh yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Like to the point where they were offensively bad and just shat on the original. So yes, but I would think, I think now we are starting.
And that's what most young people would recognize.
Sure.
Is I would say that's the issue. If you look at, like, for example, The Thing was a remake, but it was done decades later, and it was done for like artistic reasons, not to try and cash in on a known property.
Yes,
the Total Recall remake.
Yes.
Or the RoboCop
remake.
Both of which completely jettison all of what made the originals good.
Yes.
And make them incredibly generic and dull.
Sure.
Even Judge Dredd as well.
Oh my God.
I liked Dredd 3D. I really liked Dredd. I really couldn't sit
through it because like half of my friends were in that movie and I was just like, you guys look so weird.
Oh, yeah, that was filmed in, South Africa, right?
Half my friends were in that movie. Like the woman with the baby was my friend Nicole. The woman who got crushed at the beginning in front of the plane was my friend Shockey.
It was just a marathon of your friends dying in front of you.
All my friends. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Fucking weird.
I never considered that.
That's so funny. That is.
I do like that movie though. I think that movie.
Lena Headey's performance was amazing.
I haven't seen the original Judge Dredd, but the impression that I've gotten, because I watched the Nostalgia Critic review of it like 10 years ago, was that it was real dumb.
Mm. Yeah, it was. They were really, really, really dumb. But I mean, and also, like, I think it's Kurt Urban, right? He did a really good job. Did a really good job. And Lena Headey's performance was again outstanding.
She's great.
Yeah. Like it was good. Yeah, it was good.
Big Carl Urban fan.
I enjoyed the bits where I didn't watch my friends die.
Fair.
That should be the title of this.
Yeah, I enjoyed the bit.
I enjoyed the bits where I didn't watch my friends die.
Oh man, that's funny.
Somebody's commentary on the war that they just came back from.
Oh my God. That's all they said. That like whole classic thing. Like, if we don't talk about the war.
I enjoyed the bits where I didn't watch my friends die.
That was good. That was better. So just to round off that point, what I'm trying to say is I think that generally we've got that people have got better at, or at least producers who do want to cash in, because I'm not saying that they're not doing it for financial reasons. They are, of course. But producers who do want to cash in on an unknown property have got better at trusting the original creators, or at least really, really genuinely good fans and like talented filmmakers in the making of remakes and redos, etc. Blade Runner 2049 being a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm saying, like, when you've got pretty much the entire team that worked on The Matrix working now on The Matrix 4, I feel like we can at least do them the justice of saying we can trust that they are going to have the best intentions. Whether it works out, that's a whole different thing. But I feel like we can at least let them do that without, like, the hubbub of, like, no, leave it alone. Do you know what I mean? I think just, like,
they've already soiled it.
Yeah.
They there are more bad Matrix movies than there are
good ones. I was going to say, exactly. The third film is
Matrix 3. Let's see Matrix 3.
I want them to just remake that movie.
Terminator so and okay. Alien. Mm. I think both of those franchises have more bad movies than good ones.
Star Wars.
Oh yes. Have you seen the most recent Terminator?
Star Wars. I mean, by far. Like literally. Like I've said, 2.5 good movies in my mind. 2.5. So, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I would say 5.
Like, okay. Yeah. Well that's five. A discussion for a whole other time. Jeremy. Four, oh, no. Yonati, I think. You're next. What do you got for us?
Okay. So, the penultimate one on my list is Children of Men.
Yay, that movie's awesome. Mm. That movie is sick.
Just for, I mean, like, if you don't like the film, if you don't like Clive Owen, I don't know what's wrong with you. But also, like... That's that one long cascading panning shot, and I live for it. It is executed so beautifully, and the tears streaming down my face. I love that movie.
This
and
is
again,
Alfonso
another
Cuaron,
soft,
yes?
subtle.
I believe.
It is.
It is.
Favorite directors. Director who visual feasts on screen.
Incredible film.
I'm going to send you a video of Terrence Malick movies so you can know what I'm talking about. This is
he's just not
this
letting you know. You have to see 12
these
Monkeys.
Bush League amateur. No, I'm kidding. They are good, but like, if you want to watch some evocative visual beauty storytelling.
I googled it and I found A Tree of Life, which is just a collection of beautiful shots, is the poster. So I was like,
Tree of Life.
Well,
Tree of Life
I need
is gorgeous.
That movie.
It's gorgeous.
I'm going to send you a video that is just I'm putting it in the chat now. Watch it later.
Okay.
It's a video compilation of shots of a bunch of his movies up until The Tree of Life.
Okay. Very exciting. Beautiful. Thank you, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Sorry, Yonati. Did not mean to cut you off. I agree.
Children
is a phenomenal movie.
Subtle writing, excellent speculative fiction.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
As soon as you said Clive Owen, I feel like Clive Owen is like somebody that you would like. I don't know. As soon as you said the name Clive Owen, I was like, Clive Owen is very much the kind of actor that young Yonati would have been a big old fan of.
He absolutely
fits the mold.
Yeah, I mean, like his
Billy
performance
Zane,
in
Keanu
in Inside
Reeves,
Man.
Yeah, Clive Owen.
Tall, dark haired man. Jesus.
Stark-haired stoic white guys.
I got it tied. Yeah. I got it tied.
Wow.
It's a problem.
Yeah, fully.
It's a problem.
Fully.
It's some internalized racism right there.
Oh, boy.
Hey, but you know what? That internalized racism, it looks good.
It looks real good. It looks real good. It looks real good.
Hey, look, name me another podcast in which you have this conversation happening right now. Name me one. Name me one and we'll just stop.
Sexy self-hatred right here.
That's just sexy.
Sexy self-hatred. White supremacy has never looked
so good. The thing is, we couldn't be saying it about like Keanu Reeves as well. I feel like genuinely might be the nicest white man.
Nicest fucking
super
man
nice
like, ever to walk the earth as well. So I just want to fundamentally, because I also know that Keanu Reeves listens to this show. I also want to just say we are not putting you in that bracket at all.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, funny. Jeremy, name me another film, please.
Okay. This is another honorable mention I'm just going to throw up very quickly. Moon. Go check it out. That movie's awesome.
I love that movie.
Do I have enough time to just give the premise of Moon before going to my final movie?
Please do. No, please. If it was any other movie, I might not say, but I love that movie. It's so good.
So Moon takes place in an alternate future in which we have discovered a very precious resource on the moon that we now rely on for our fuel and everything like that. We have established a station on the dark side of the moon to collect this mineral all the time. And in order to like man this station, we just leave one dude. Sam Rockwell is the one guy who's manning this station. Mm-hmm. I think you man it for like a year at a time.
Yes.
Just by yourself. The only other person is a little robot named Gertie. It's your only friend. And Sam Rockwell is kind of losing his mind a little bit from having been alone for so long. He's just seeing things. He misses his family. He can't talk to them directly. All he sees is video messages from them. And then he sees that one of the machines has malfunctioned. And he's got to go out there in the little moon buggy in his space suit and go fix the machine. Well, while he's driving to the moon buggy, while he's driving to the machine, he has like a little hallucination and accidentally crashes the dune buggy and passes out. He wakes up back at the center, having been woken up by the robot. And then he's like, oh, man, this is crazy. He doesn't really have much memory of what just happened. But he looks at the sensors and sees that the machine is still malfunctioning. So he puts the spacesuit on, gets in yet another dune buggy, because I guess they got more than one, drives out there.
NASA had a budget this time. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And drives out there. And on his way, finds the dune buggy from before with himself still inside it.
Mm.
And that is the premise, the very beginning of Moose.
So good.
Such a gorgeous movie. Sam Rockwell genuinely is an unbelievable actor. Like, I never have I seen something with Sam Rockwell in it that I haven't just been like, if I could be as talented as your fucking toenails, my friend, I would be a great actor. Like, he's brilliant. Just brilliant.
Yeah. And Duncan Jones, David Bowie's son.
Yeah, yeah. Oddly, hasn't really done, like, they did the Source Code
was the other one. I liked that
one. Like, which is, Source Code. Like, not really. There was, like, a weird spiritual successor, if I'm not wrong, on, was it called Mute or something? It was on Netflix. It was, like, universe, directed by Duncan Jones, and it had a Skarsgård in it, probably Alexander. And it was pretty bad. The best part of the movie was that Sam Rockwell was in it, like, on the news, in, like, a TV clip of, like, him going up to the moon, like, on, like, the maiden voyage of, like, That's, like, the best part about it. Like, otherwise, it's not great.
Guys, look, he may be a talent, but he doesn't have to worry about paying his bills. So, you know, it's fine. We don't need to worry about him.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Duncan Jones is fine. He's got that David Bowie legacy money. Let's not worry about him.
He's got that legacy money.
Yeah, my last movie,
though. Who else is fine?
This would be my number one, I think. Mm-hmm. This is my favorite sci-fi movie. It's the movie Her, starring Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, yeah. That's really good.
Yes.
Love that movie. Mm. And it's directed by Spike Jonze. Spike Jonze has a great track record of directing just really, really good emotional movies. Her is just, like, the performances set in, like, the fact that it's, like, a near future, it's one of the ones on this list that I think feels the most attainable. Like, it feels very realistic, as opposed to what the world might look like in a time period like that, and also what direction artificial intelligence could very easily go in. I like that it takes a much more tender and emotional look at the advancement of artificial intelligence, rather than just being like, well, the Terminator route, where it's like they take over,
or the Matrix
route, or basically any other example of artificial intelligence on this list, where it's just like, oh no, it's a threat. For once,
or
it's
AI,
like, oh, no, it's,
even like the film AI, which is AI, another.
That's true.
Another potential honorable mention as well.
Yeah, that movie.
iRobot.
Cool.
Oh yeah, iRobot. Yeah. Did you just shoot at me with your eyes closed? Sorry, carry on, Jeremy.
Sorry, I just had to throw it in there to put a spanner in the works because it's such a bad film.
I think that movie came out the same year, I think, or within a year. I think it was within a year of The Master. Her came out with, like, a year of The Master. It was like the Joaquin Phoenix renaissance, where, like, after he had done I'm Still Here or whatever. He comes raging back with all of these incredible performances. And her is just such, like, he's so tender as well. He's like, he feels so open and soft in that movie.
One of Scarlett Johansson's best performances as well.
Honestly,
I'm genuinely not kidding.
Her voice is so good. Like, she does such a good job of voice acting in that movie.
She was actually replaced as well.
Replaced Samantha Morton.
Yeah, she replaced him. Yeah. That's what I mean. She was not in it the whole time, is what I meant to say.
But a phenomenal movie. There's so many good things about that movie.
I think I have a nice one to piggyback on the back of that, which is my very clear number one, and I think I've spoken to you about this a few times, Jeremy, which is The Arrival. I think it's just Arrival.
It's just Arrival.
It's just Arrival. I don't know why I said The Arrival.
My favorite science fiction movie
of all time.
I don't remember the name of it.
Arrival. Again, it's a very, very, very different take on a alien invasion movie.
Yeah.
I think it is absolutely stunning. Amy Adams is so gorgeous in this movie. Tackles some really incredibly human, like, emotions and feelings and problems, whilst under the scope of this, like, truly like kind of, you know, international galactic kind of premise in these pods arriving. And I think like what is so gorgeous about it is that it plays off of your own expectations of what a sci-fi movie like this would be like. You are, and this is kind of like a minor spoiler, I guess, but like you are constantly waiting for like the bomb to go off in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it doesn't. And I love that. Like, I think
that is a huge spoiler.
Like, I love that.
Yeah.
We can take that out. We'll edit that out. We'll put something over the end because I feel bad now.
The overriding tension of the movie.
I feel bad now that I might have ruined that for someone. So I'm going to, this is me retroactively saying, let's just bleep that bit out and continue the conversation. Yeah. But you're constantly waiting for, and
that. Yeah.
We'll use that bit instead.
Yeah.
But yeah. You go.
I think that what my favorite bit about that film is taking it from the linguistic approach. Because having studied like sign signifier and like language study, like that is just so beautiful to bring it down, to take that massive intergalactic theme and bring it down to just how do we communicate? Mm-hmm. Because now we have to relearn what is communication and understanding one another on a planet where arguably, I mean, we can communicate with some languages, but we fail pretty fucking dismally. Yeah. Just look at the dumpster fire that the planet is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. There's loads of joy, but it's a dumpster fire as well.
But
just bringing it down to that very basic, simple, like what is the sign and signifier in this and how do I communicate?
And I think it's just generally, it's like a fascinating topic for me personally. Like when I think back to like you know us having the ability to like decode like ancient hieroglyphs and stuff, I think it's something that is so intrinsically like there's a reason why there's so many like conspiracy theories about like the pyramids being built by aliens and all this, because I think that like
it was black people,
guys.
Yeah, for sure, it was black people.
But I think that there is so much in like even in like the Mayan calendar and all this kind of like there's so much that kind of feels
brown people.
Yes. But there's,
I'm sorry to keep interrupting.
Hey, look, always interrupt for the comedy. That's fine.
Were the pyramids built by the Nubians?
Potentially, because they have like we were discussing actually the other day, Jeremy. They have their own pyramids. Yeah. And I think that predates. When I was looking literally the other day, and I'm pretty sure, but I could be wrong because also the Egyptians are around for a very long time.
There's a lot of back and forth between those two cultures.
But basically, I think there is so much. I think there is a general global fascination with the idea of like what came before, and to an extent, almost is slightly alien in the sense that there is such a different way of communicating, and the idea that we have developed into a point where we have. Where we think we have finished language. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like we develop languages anymore to discover new ways of communicating and new ideas. And I think that it as a movie, captures something so fundamentally interesting and fascinating. And I absolutely adore it. I finished that movie and was just, like, gobsmacked. I felt like my brain expanded after watching it. I got more intelligent watching this movie.
It's a great movie, and I'm
very excited to see if Denis Villeneuve can like kind of complete the hat trick now and make Dune add Dune to my list.
Yeah.
I think he will because I hit him in sci-fi when that happens. Chef's kiss.
He's amazing.
Unbelievable filmmaker. And Arrival is just an amazing film. Yonatzy, bring us home. Yeah. What do you have?
Yeah, my final one, and I think I've put this on a list before, actually, I think. But it's going to be Dark City.
Mm. Hey,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's going to be Dark City. It's just so good. And I'll explain why I think it's also like a really great setting, but also would drive you nuts as a DM and players. You'd have to keep insane notes or discard your notes. Actually, I digress. It is just one of the most, especially because it came out in 1999, just its aesthetic and its vibe was just like so like new, out of left field. It's always discussed as like, no, was it 1999 or earlier? Because it's discussed as like 98? The proto film to The Matrix.
I'm looking at it. Hold on. I think I just saw it.
98. It's like the proto film to The Matrix. Mm-hmm. Like it's
iconic.
It's just one of my
the look
iconic.
Yeah, a much campier. Matrix.
I mean, like, can we just take a moment to appreciate the beauty that is Rufus Sewell? I'm just like, it's
oh
that
my god,
I
perfectly fits. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, Rufus Sewell. Of course, Rufus Sewell's another one on that list. A Knight's Tale. Young Inati must have gone like, mental for that. Like, I can. Yeah. 100%. No question.
But yeah, that's one of my. And Jennifer Connelly was great in that. Kiefer Sutherland's amazing in that. And just the scope of the set, the concept, just everything is amazing. And the story. The story in like a really weird, like kind of film noir way, but still like you're thinking it's film noir and then it's really not film noir. And then it's something completely else. And then it's something else entirely after that.
Yeah, that movie's awesome.
Jennifer Connelly does really have like a great look for that kind of movie as well. Like, there's something about her that is very. Very like weirdly like symmetrical and just slightly like oh man, it just fits that kind of setting, you know what I mean? But sorry, Jeremy, what you gonna say?
It's amazing.
I was gonna say one thing about Arrival that we didn't mention. The alien designs are fantastic.
Oh yeah,
because it's one of the first movies where you actually have intelligent non-humanoid looking aliens who show up. In a realistic movie like that, like an alien invasion movie.
Yeah.
You'll get like weird ones in Star Wars and stuff like that, but it's not the same thing.
I think it's I just like her back as well. Like just again the way that it sets up the tension of the movie. Or like I won't put any spoilers because we've already had to bleep out some spoilers from this episode. But like when they first arrive, which I don't think is potentially a spoiler. Like even just,
I mean, it's called the
Arrival, exactly. But when they arrive, when the Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner, again, Jeremy Renner, one of his better, just good solid performance from Jeremy Renner. When they first like go, oh my word, that first section is. And the way that gravity works and like all of that, it just, it's just such a feast. It really is such a feast. Okay, cool. To wrap up this episode, quick fire, if you could DM a game in any of these settings, which one would it be? And I'll give you one sentence to say why before we say so long to the Shire folk.
For me, it would absolutely be Dark City. And my singular sentence as to why is just the setting always changes. Your character always changes every 24 hours.
Amazing.
Every 24 hours.
Wow.
Your backstory shifts.
Amazing. I've got mine, Jeremy, if you want a little bit longer.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I got two.
Okay. I'm going to go with The Matrix because as a DM, I hate monks. So everyone monks.
We gotta get you to play a monk sometime.
I am actually playing a monk very soon, hilariously. So yeah. I can't talk about it right now, but I'll explain to you as soon as we stop recording.
Okay.
Cool.
I would say for me it would be Brazil or Starship Troopers. Brazil, if you want just like a kooky setting, a really, really interesting setting and also vaguely threatening setting. And Starship Troopers, if you just want absolute insane carnage, satirical, violent. Yeah, just it depends on which one you're looking for, what kind of game.
Amazing. Well, let us know what your favorite sci-fi movies are. You can head over and do that on our Discord if you want. We just had the Discord revamped by our incredible moderators. Oh my word, does it look good now? Shout out to the mods.
Shout out to the mods.
Dusty, Jerry,
mods.
Jericho, and Ghost as well. I do have, just so much thanks. It looks so great. It looks so great. Head over to the Discord. You should be able to find links for that, like, everywhere on, like, our link tree and stuff like that. And I think in the description of this episode, it looks amazing. So go over there and you can tell us what your favorite sci-fi movies are and why. You can find us everywhere at TB Halflings. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. You feel free to tweet at us and send us stuff on Instagram and things like that. And we will take a look. And if you've got ideas for future episodes, discussions, or maybe future top fives, we will absolutely do that. We should do like some Dimmy. Maybe we should do like a D&D top five after this, like a monster top five or something. I don't know. I'm just liking that idea. Might be a fun one to do, maybe. But yes, that is about everything from us today. Thank you very much for joining along with us. This has been our sci-fi top fives. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
Shire folk.
Meow, 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 meow.
The weird wait, we're all just staring at each other like,
who's gonna do it? Who's gonna flinch?
It's like the ending of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. We're all just like,
that was a HeadGum Podcast.